On this episode of Complicated Conversations, we welcome Bryn Weaver. Bryn is a fan of Velociraptors, the alien movies, well, some of them, red wine, and wild adventures. When not busy at her day job or writing, Bryn can be found relaxing with her husband and son or enjoying her other passions, which include riding horses and motorcycles, reading, and spending time with friends and family. Her new novel, Butcher and Blackbird, is out now, and that is what we are discussing today on Pop Fiction Women. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So much we want to discuss. But before we get into it, why don't you give us the elevator pitch for your novel?
Sure. So, elevator pitch for my novel.
That's a tough one.
Like, do I start with the accidental cannibalism? Let's lead.
We're going to get to that. Don't worry.
We are.
Yeah. really... It's down to every serial killer deserves a friend. Every serial killer deserves love, at least in this universe. So we have Rowan, who is a serial unaliver, and Sloane, who is also a serial unaliver, who finds herself in a little bit of an unusual predicament. The two strike up a friendship, and over the course of several years, that friendship, which revolves around hunting other serial killers, the actual bad guys, so they're kind of like vigilantes, it develops from friendship into romance. So that would be the very high-level synopsis without giving too much away.
Perfect. Yes.
That was perfect. And this is it's billed as a dark rom-com, obviously based on the elevator pitch. You can see why. Your two main characters, as you said, are killers who kill serial killers. There's a list of trigger warnings that is longer than my grocery list for a family of four. That does include, as you've mentioned, accidental cannibalism and not so accidental cannibalism. And so you've acknowledged, you know, that this book maybe is not for everyone. It was for me, just so you know. And I didn't know that I needed an accidental cannibalism book. But like, tell me, like, where did the idea come from? And did you ever think... Or did anyone ever tell you, maybe in the process, like this is too much? Like, you've gone too far here, Bryn.
Actually, quite the opposite. And I will get to that, I guess, in a minute. But the idea really came from one day. I was just, like, coasting through TikTok. And it was at the time where a lot of people were doing, like, their green flags versus their red flags in books. And I saw someone who had posted her red flags, which were a bunch of, like, kind of a laundry list of things that I feel are very dark romance. And it was kind of like, oh, that sucks. Like, you know, she's basically listing off all the things I like about morally gray men. and then her green flag was friends to lovers. And I thought, well, I could just match those up and see what happens. And I thought, I really like the idea of what would someone like that feel like if they read this book. And I tried to, you know, I just had a lot of fun. Like, would that challenge their perception of their red flags and their green flags? That would be awesome if it did. So I just kind of like started with that. I am a pantser, so I really just started with that first scene of Sloane in the cage at the beginning. Did not know where I was going to go with it. It took me maybe like a little while to figure that out. And then I was like, hey, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so I could like write a funny scene about that, and it sort of snowballed from there. And in terms of people saying like, is it going too far, I actually connected with a friend of mine when I was doing the scene for the accidental cannibalism, and she's another author, her name is Lauren Beale, and I was like, I really want to have this lobotomized man in the book, a lobotomized manservant. Is that going too far? And she's like, no, farther.
It's perfect.
So that's like, it was actually quite the opposite. And I think just in terms of like it being a dark rom-com, I've written dark romance books before. And one thing that people often tag me in positive reviews was like humor embedded into those books. Yeah. So I just said, oh, lean into that and just go for what I want to do and see. Out it came.
Yeah. Which is kind of like part of Fleabag's success, right? Like, that is such a dark and heavy and traumatic, but if you got the humor, it's a beautiful blend of perspective. Not everyone can do it, so it's very impressive. I want to talk about Sloane. Sloane, the orb weaver or blackbird, as he calls her. You said that you aspire to write female-focused stories about complex, resilient, imperfect characters who struggle with anger, trauma, fear, courage, and love. It's basically the whole point of our podcast is to talk about those women, give them complexity and dimension, where we don't always, where people are willing to write them off as unlikable or, you know, like someone you don't want to follow. And Sloane is capable. She's smart. She's loyal. She's also literally deadly. but we see her be vulnerable and we find out about her trauma and her wounds. And against the armor that she's built up and this kind of facade that she puts on, underneath, she's asking, am I lovable? Which is, I can't imagine anything more relatable and universal than that question and that search for understanding that. Tell us about Sloane, your development of her, and how you melded those things together.
Sure. Yeah, when I first started writing her and I had this idea that she was going to be a bit of a loner, like for me, when I'm writing the characters, they do really, like I might start off with kind of a vague idea, but they evolve as the story evolves. So I did have this idea, like she is a loner. She's got a complex history that we, you know, I didn't want to go too crazy into detail of like how she became the way that she is, but you know, she's got social anxiety, but she can still be a badass. And I think I know a lot of women that are like that. So she's not based on anyone specific, but she is based on experiences that I've had with other women who are strong, capable, complex. You know, I never want it to be like reductive, like this character is socially awkward, therefore like unlikable and da da da. You know, I don't think real people are like that. And in my head, the characters are real people that just, it's almost like they exist somewhere else in the world. I'm just sort of looking in on their life, right? So yeah, I wanted that for her. I hoped that it would pull off that way that she's, you know, she is meticulous. She's unsure of herself, like she's confident in some aspects of her life, not confident in others. And I think that's like, it is, like you said, it's sort of a universal feeling for many of us. We're not, you know, fully confident in all aspects of our lives at all the time. Or there might be some areas where we just feel stronger and more capable than others. And that's very much Sloane.
So true. And that's the thing, obviously the circumstances of her life and what she does are so extreme and unusual. And yet the way you've just described how she is as a person and a character,
anyone.
So relatable. So you did that beautifully.
Thank you.
So we have to talk about Rowan. Love him. The butcher of Boston. Falls hard and fast for Sloane. As you said, they start as friends. And early on, he says to her, I bet I know the darkest parts of you better than anyone, just like you know the darkest parts of me. And despite that, you still want to hang out with me. I think that makes you my friend. And so as the relationship progresses, that is really the crux of it to me, what he's saying there, that Rowan sees her, as we like to say with a capital S, and her damage and her darkness or her pitch black soul. But he loves all of her. And we talk a lot on here about this idea of being seen. But you, I feel like, hit on something that I think is so important about that. That being seen can be scary and uncomfortable, right? If someone can actually see into that soul of yours. But for Rowan, Sloane says, you made it safe to feel seen. And I just think that safety and trust between them is really everything for me and the foundation for their relationship. So tell me about Rowan and him being this safe space for Sloane to see who she is. And accept.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something that's like a little bit unusual and maybe doesn't make sense to a lot of other people, but it does to me in how I framed him up. Like at first, I kind of thought that he would At first, I thought I might deviate from this original plan of it being friends to lovers, and it might end up being enemies to lovers, because I've done a lot of enemies to lovers and I'm comfortable in that space. But he did not want to be that way at all. Like, he was very intent in my head on, like, I am this person, I'm in love with this woman from, like, the get-go, pretty much. Like, I'm obsessed with her. So, okay, I'll just go with that. But what I took, because, yeah, I've learned the hard way, you can't fight a character on what they want to be. So I don't, you know, I just run with it. And this is the part that sounds unusual, but I actually did treat it like he is almost dealing with a wild creature. Like, this is so weird, but I've done a lot of, like, rehabilitation of birds. Like, if things would fall out of the nest, because we had a farm, I would pick them up and feed them and hand raise them and then set them free. And, like, it's just like a theme in our family. Like, oh, she's got another bird. Like, great. But I learned a lot about, and because we had so many, have had so many animals, like, I've learned a lot about trust, and giving a creature, especially something that is flighty, that has difficulty trusting, you have to give it space. You have to let it come to you. There's, like, a push and a pull. So that was, like, how I treated Rowan and his thoughts about Sloan. It's like, he knew if he pushed too fast or too hard, she would go and he would never see her again. And that is absolutely true of very many, like, wild creatures. You know, if you push them too fast, they'll just take off and you'll never get them back. Yeah. So that, like, thought process of, like, how to work with a creature that could be, like, quite different from you in the way that it thinks, the way that it behaves, like, that was continuously kind of what I went back to with him.
Yeah. And that makes complete sense, and especially why he didn't want to be enemies to lovers, because the distance he's putting between them is for her. But he knows that if he does, she'll just run off, she'll be skittish. And I love that. I love that you rehabilitate birds too, because my husband always calls, says I collect broken birds, but they're not real, they're my friends.
Probably it's a similar concept.
Exactly. Don't go in too hard. Yes.
And then sometimes you have to, like, pull back a little bit and let them come to you. So in that chapter, it's called Creance, which is actually it's terminology from falconry. So it's like the thread or the leash that you have on a falcon or whatever when you're training them. So when he goes to her house and gives her, sends the groceries over, like, he knows that, you know, he can't get too in her face because she's just left already, right? Mm-hmm. But then he also knows he has to pull back enough to see if she'll come his way. So that's why he then, at the end of the chapter, he leaves and kind of, like, scopes out to see if she'll look out the door, and she's expecting a delivery, and then he's like, no, I gotta go, I can't look at my phone, I can't look at it until I get home, because otherwise I'll turn around. It's that whole principle.
It's throughout that. Now that you've said it, I'm thinking of so many scenes and moments where he's this dynamic plays out.
So a lot of people that listen to our podcast are writers aspiring and established, and we love talking about the journey to publication. And this one had a very interesting a journey, I think. I know everyone wants to know how you go viral this big on TikTok. There is no formula. There's no answer to that. But do tell people about the journey. You started this one self-published and then completely went viral on BookTok. And then you got caught the eye of Zando. Tell us about that.
It's a whirlwind journey. I had just published a co-authored book earlier in the year and then started working on this one. And this time around, I was like, oh, I'm not going to do a pre-order because I'm a bit of a data nerd. So I just wanted to compare the data to see if that would affect performance or whatever. And it wasn't like a banger of a release. you know, I self-published it in mid-August, and I had done all my like legwork in advance, like sending out ARCs, doing a cover reveal, like all that. And I could tell like there was a lot of enthusiasm for it in my small crew of people who are so kind to spend their time, you know, reading in advance, like reading ARC copies. I could tell by the way that they were coming back to me with comments that they were really loving it. But I was just doing my normal stuff. And then Christy from Read Between the Lines, she just randomly picked it up. Like, I never sent it to her. She just, I don't know where she found it. And she read it and she loved it. And she started posting about it. And that was like the catalyst for it just kind of all of a sudden exploding. So more and more people started to pick it up, I think, because the premise is a little bit weird too. And then they were like, dark romantic comedy, and what's accidental cannibalism? So right. It's just, you know, those things I think factored together in the perfect storm, and it went kaboom, you know, it just like took on a life of its own. And then when I was, I started getting all these inquiries from foreign publishers, and they would say, like, who's your agent? Want to talk to them about publishing it in my country? And I was getting several of these. And I was like, I don't know what to do with them. I don't have an agent. I don't know what I'm doing. So I thought, well, I should probably find an agent, or like, I know there's a clearing process. I don't know. I've not been through it, so I don't know what it's about, but I know it's hard. And a Hungarian publisher, we were back and forth again, the same question, like, do you have an agent? And I said, no. Do you have any recommendations? And he gave me two names. And I reached out to one of them, and that was Kim Whalen on a Sunday. She got back to me within 30 minutes and set up a call for the next day. And then then we started going out that week to foreign publishers and like in domestic as well. So Zando was one of a few that we talked to, and they put in a preempt. So they, you know, so that they could hopefully buy the rights earlier than their competitors. So, it was a whirlwind journey.
Yeah, I love that. And I want to ask, but first I have to ask, have you talked to Gillian Flynn? Have you, like, I mean.
I have not. No, okay. I have not.
Okay, put that on the list. Yeah. but how does all that feel? This is not the first book you've published. This is not your first time. To just, it must feel like it comes out of the blue. And so many books are great and deserve, but viral is something that is not about deservingness or quality or even, you know, it's about something that can't really be named. How does that feel?
It's a combination of things, right? Because it's amazing to feel like something. Like, I've always felt like something could catch fire, and how to get there, you know, like, I think, like, myself, like a lot of other authors, like, we rack our brains of, like, how do we get more reach? How do we go viral? Like, how do all these things happen? And sometimes it really truly is a perfect storm. And you're right, there are so many books that deserve it, you know, more than mine does, and people that have been working at it for years. So it feels like a relief to have something catch fire finally, but it's also like it doesn't come without a cost. Like, there is a lot of pressure, there's a lot of like communication, there's a lot of work, obviously, which is good. I'm not like saying, oh, it's such a bummer, you know. It's not. The journey behind the scenes is also a lot more complex. And so there is a ton of like pressure and nights where you're like super late, like, and you're like, oh shit, what have I done?
Right. Yes.
You know,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as you're saying this, the pressure, and this is so different now because you're now doing it with Zando and with a publisher. So your prior ones, you self-published. So was that, I mean, I guess, yeah, you had made that decision to go that route. And so now you're sort of thrust into another route. So why did you, the self-publishing, just you wanted to go that route before?
And it's got to be the data nerd part
That's
of you, right?
Because
publishing is really hard. Yeah. You have to know. Otherwise, you just press play and it go, or press send and it goes into the ether.
Yeah.
But that's not what you were doing. You were, you paid attention to metrics and the things that matter to people, to readers, which is what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It was a calculated, strategic, like I had to learn a lot. I had to fail a lot as I went. I had to constantly adjust, you know. I'm glad that I went that route because I knew more about promoting myself and promoting my work because of that experience over the previous years. So then when it came to conversations with Zando, no, I don't know everything about some of the ads that they're doing, but I do know about engagement with readers and what has given me the success to this point. So I can make informed or have informed conversations with them to some degree, even though I don't know the crazy world of print and getting it into stores that I've never been in before. So I feel like I'm learning a lot, which I really love that bit, but I am glad that I had that foundation to be able to say, hey, wait a second, what about this, you know? So
You have another perspective. That's incredible.
So it's helpful to not go in and be I think if I had gone in that route just for myself, I wouldn't have known when to scrutinize certain decisions or when to question them, or maybe I would not have felt as confident to be asking those questions, right? So
absolutely.
And this is now with Zando a trilogy. You've got a three book. So I know the next one, I think, is coming out in June. Leather and Lark. I'm so excited for more of these characters. So can you give us a little scoop on that?
Yeah, I can. So I will say it's the hardest book that I've ever written. And I think it's because of the circumstances around everything, B&B blowing up and the pressure of that. And then learning this whole new world. And we were also moving at the same time.
Oh,
so
gosh.
I've relocated countries and got sick a few times. So it wasn't just a book. I mean, I'm super happy with how it turned out and that experience. I think, again, I'm really glad that it wasn't an easy ride. B&B was just joyful and oh my gosh, this is fun. I was having fun. And this is I had fun, but it came at a not a price, but I don't know. It was I feel better prepared for the future, I guess, having been through it. But anyway, the book itself is A Marriage of Convenience, Hate to Love. And it's Lark, who is introduced in the first book, which is Sloane's best friend, and Lachlan, who is Rowan's older brother. So they do not like each other.
No.
Lachlan has sort of a double life. So he has a leather studio in the day, but he also has a really crazy boss. He's a contract killer. And then Lark has some secrets of her sleeve, and she's a musician. It's an interesting mix. It's opposites attract a little bit. Grumpy sunshine.
And it's a good thing they're connected, because you're still promoting this one, and the next one's coming out sooner than you think.
But you do such a good job of introducing these two in here. I mean, Lark is being their relationship, their friendship, the loyalty between them. I mean, I love her. And these brothers, I mean, I know the third brother would then be the third in the trilogy. I mean, they really, they have minor roles in here, but their personalities all each come out, the banter between them. You were saying the humor earlier, you love them all, even though this one obviously focuses on Rowan. So anyone who reads this is going to want to see what happens with those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other brothers and, Sloane as well, they do factor into this book too.
Good.
So I wanted it to be that you could read this book and not read the other two, but I did want it to have that more interconnected sort of thread of, standalones, but definitely the interconnection. You hopefully get that in this book.
Bryn, do you have, I can't remember if we slotted 30 minutes or an hour.
I have time.
So Kate, do you want to go back to the chili pepper question and
Do I? I mean, I do. All right, well, I do. I'll... And then we could do astrology, but, or whatever you wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, the chili pepper scale.
I jumped ahead. We have so many questions for you, but I really wanted to talk about the publishing journey. And I knew you would be more honest about the complexity. I love that word because it is. It's wonderful. You don't want to trade it in, but it's more complex than just like, yay, this is all super.
Yeah. I'm just obsessed with the heat of this book. And, you know, this chili pepper scale. I read a lot of romance, contemporary romance. And, you know, I'm familiar with it. I can't say I'm an expert of what qualifies as 4 or 5 chili peppers. I don't know, but this is hot and it's gotta be up there. Is that something that you focus on or when you're writing it or like, and I don't know, it seems to come so naturally. It's amazing. I mean, it is. I don't think it's easy to write something that feels really authentic.
It's
and
not.
Also just really hot. So
thank you. Yeah, those are usually my favorite scenes to write. They seem to just like I can get into the groove of a spicy scene and then like crack it out fairly quickly. And I really enjoy writing them. I think they're super fun. I always like worry myself like, oh, is it going to be similar to other ones I've written? But for some reason, like something weird will come into the mix and it makes like each one feels unique to me anyway. In terms of like planning them out, because I'm such a pantser, I have like kind of an idea of like what this couple, what might make sense for a particular couple, but I don't really plan it out until I just get there. And oddly for like B&B, it was the first time that I really dragged my heels in writing the first spicy scene because I felt like it was so important to Rowan in particular because he had been like pining for so many years for Sloane. And I was like, I gotta make it good for him. And like for her too, obviously, like the women's pleasure in the books is always like the forefront of what I'm doing. But I just knew like he was so enamored with her and like it needed to be right. And once I got there, he was just kind of like, we got this.
Yes.
Yes, I can see that. They're really fun. Yeah, I really like writing them. I don't know where I would put it on a scale. I mean, I've read some pretty spicy stuff. So, yeah, it didn't, like, I've written other books that had more spicy scenes in them than this one does. Like Black Sheep, for example, had a lot in it. But yeah, it just seemed like everything fit together the way I would have hoped for. Yeah, definitely.
And I want to just talk about the annual murder competition, but basically as foreplay, right?
Yeah.
Because Kate and I are both very competitive people. We know that makes sparks fly between people. It works really well for the basis of a romance, especially one that isn't enemies to lovers, right? It's friends, but then you get that a little bit of that spice in there. Tell us about that and that structure and why you wanted to include that.
Yeah, that was like really very much an idea that like came from Rowan just trying to on the fly like figure out any way that he could keep this girl engaged and like keep this woman like some way to see her again. So it really came from trying to think from his perspective. Like already he's figured out that she's flighty. Already he knows that he himself, just by being there and having found her, even doing that, like letting her out, she doesn't trust him. So he's got to like figure out something that'll appeal to her very quickly. And that's really how it came about. Is just like, what would make sense? What would he think could potentially just like hook her enough that she would come? And she herself, I think it made sense thinking about it from her perspective that she's a little bit like bored. She loves what she does for her hobby, but she's also a little bit lonely. And like she's starting to recognize as she's like been doing this kind of thing on her own for some time that it's not so fun to be alone. Maybe it would be good to challenge myself a little bit. Yeah. So yeah, that's really how it came about, was trying to, from both of their sides, figure out what would be a good common connector. And I think having it as a friendly rivalry worked for them both as well, where they're not like, I think if it had been an enemies thing, she would have been like, no way.
Right.
But the fact she's got a little tiny bit of trust in him, just enough to like, okay, maybe he won't murder me in my sleep in the first game.
Well, yeah, it makes perfect sense. When you talk about being a pantser, you also, I'm hearing that you think a lot about these things. Is that, do you do that through drafts or do you do that through like brainstorming before, pre-planning?
No, I see, like, I wish, because sometimes I feel like that would probably take a little pressure off to know what I'm doing. But I like see in scenes, and then I have a kind of like vague idea of like, I guess I see it in the way that the characters kind of understand their world. I see a scene, I'll write a scene. So I don't write in a linear fashion at all. Like B&B, I wrote that first chapter and a half, then I skipped ahead to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre bit. I wrote that like two chapters, and then I went back and I did like the Thorsten one. So I like bounce all over the place, two scenes, but I think I feel a certain way about the characters and where they need, where they are and where they need to get to. So it's a weird process of threading it together as I go. And oftentimes I don't know even what the main like conflict is going to be. So like in B&B, I was about 2/3 through like word count wise, like finishing the book, and I still didn't know who was going to be the antagonist. So I was like having a conversation with my husband, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, should I introduce like a police officer? I don't want to do that because I felt like it would get too bogged down. Like, I need to figure this out. And I was like, well, it could be David. Like, and he was like, yeah, it could be David. And he starts talking about other stuff, and I was not listening at all. Yeah. And he's like, you're not listening to me, are you? And I was like, no.
No,
he's like, I'm not. You're David, yeah. Aren't you? And I was like, yeah. I am.
Oh, I love that. I need to go to my laptop now. I got to get this down.
Yeah, I need to, like, but we're not talking. Like, I'm going to go.
I'm sure he's used to that. It doesn't take offense.
Yeah.
Writer brain. Gotta go. But you helped me with the idea. So great. Bye.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, so we have to ask, and I don't know, maybe, Corinne, if you have a guest now. I don't know. But
I don't.
Okay, me neither. We ask all our authors, what's their sign? And do you relate? Because we have an interest here in astrology.
Yes.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So, and sometimes we know because we snoop if someone posts stuff on Instagram or, you know, or we have a good guess, but I don't know. We're both a little stumped. So now this is fun.
I would go with mutable.
Immutable sign. She might not know what those are.
Yeah,
you don't know.
Yeah.
There's three I don't of know
them.
What that is.
Anyway, okay. Tell us your sign.
Okay, I'm Scorpio.
Oh,
not immutable. Fixed sign.
Yeah, water. Okay, water though.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I also don't know Scorpio. What my other one.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
Yeah, but your Scorpios that works.
That does. It makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
A lot of sense.
Yes.
I think I'm like dead in the middle too of like of Scorpio. My birthday is November 14th, so I'm like pretty. Mm-hmm. I'm like Scorpio. Like,
I'm not cuspy. Yeah. Exactly.
But you guys would write the spiciest scenes. Let me just tell you, the Scorpios would definitely be high on the spice
Makes
scale.
Sense.
So this
Makes
works.
Sense.
This works.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I need to learn more about signs. I keep saying that.
You don't. No. Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of Scorpio hate out there. Don't let them hate on you. Mm-hmm. Scorpio is one of my favorite signs, ruled by Mars. I'm Aries. Aries and Scorpio are both ruled by Mars. So there's a like a symmetry there. Thank you so much for joining us. Before we let you go, I want to, though, ask. I mean, I don't know with what imaginary time you have or everything I read in your bio that you have to consume other things, but we always like to ask our authors what they're loving right now, TV shows or other books or anything that you're just loving and obsessed with, besides rehabilitating birds, which I also love.
Right now, because we've just moved, like we're renovating our house, and it's been a little bit crazy. So we haven't like, I also had deadlines for Leather and Lark, so I've not been consuming so much. But I did just start a book. I read. Friend of mine is Avina St. Graves, and she wrote Death's Obsession, and I just read Skin of a Sinner by her. So I just finished that one, and I'm on another one called Sucker, which I just started, and I think it's Natalie Ashe. I think that's her last name. I just started that one, so I'm hoping to get into the place where I have a little bit more time to like to consume things, like fill the well with like creative ideas, right?
Not so
Well,
easy. You've got a lot
that's
going on.
pretty good. Exactly.
No.
Your mind didn't go blank, which happens a lot, even for people who do consume other entertainment a lot. Well, Bryn, again, thank you so much for joining us. Butcher and Blackbird is out now. Leather and Lark comes out in June.
June.
So exciting.
Thank you so much. This was a
Thank
world
you.
I did not know I needed. I'm just telling you, and I loved it. So.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it was such a pleasure. So anytime, I'd love to come back.
Awesome. We love
Okay.
that.
Thank you.